How can we foster social and emotional well-being while social distancing? This is the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development podcast series, and I am Carrie Robidoux, an Extension educator. In this podcast, we will explore that question with Kate Walker. She's an Extension specialist in youth work practice for our center. Welcome to the podcast, Kate.
Thanks, Carrie. It's nice to be here.
And I perhaps should say welcome back to the podcast. You were in episode 10, and I would like to invite the listeners to revisit that podcast. It's called Getting Intentional with SEL, and in that podcast, you defined SEL and shared the toolkit that we have available for those who work with young people. It equips them to work with this topic, and it also provides activities to do with young people. This podcast is going to build on that. In that podcast, we defined that SEL is our shortened version of social and emotional learning. So we want to make sure that as we're saying SEL through the podcast, that everyone is aware of what we're referring to. I'd like to remind listeners that we are releasing a number of podcasts in response to the ever-changing world that we're living in which we're social distancing from work, from school, in many cases away from extended family and from friends. Kate, tell us why social emotional learning, SEL, and well-being is more important now than ever as we continue this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm actually joining you on this podcast from my house where we've been staying home, stay home Minnesota. I think we're coming up on day 50. Families and young people are at home together. They're trying to do distance learning. Some parents are essential workers where their young people are home without them. Others are all under one roof, driving each other crazy perhaps, right? So our social emotional well-being is more important than ever. Routines are disrupted, special events are canceled. There's lots of emotions tied up with, you know, anxiety, whether it's around the situation globally that we're facing or our own personal family stressors, grief around those loss around events and lives. And frankly, equity as well, you know, and issues of access are worsened. And so people are struggling with internet and technology divides, and there's food and housing insecurities. So the pressures of isolation, all of these things are kind of rolled up into what can be a really tense situation. And so it's certainly important that as emotions are running high and our relationships can feel disconnected, that we really need to help young people be aware of and navigate their social and emotional well-being, right? And the good news is, as you said, we can draw upon some of the work we've already been doing around social and emotional learning to really apply some of what we know can help young people practice those skills in these new circumstances.
And you refer to the work that you have already been doing. You've been working with social and emotional learning for quite some time now.
It's true. Our center had a commitment to really focus on social emotional learning a few years back. So for a number of years, we were really digging into understanding what it is, why it matters, what it looks like in out of school context in particular, and then developing trainings and resources to help support that learning. So yeah, we've got a wealth of resources for people at our disposal.
One of those resources is the Ways of Being Model tool. And that is what you're going to be referring to today in this podcast. That tool is for teaching about social and emotional learning. It has activities that can be adapted for no tech or virtual youth learning programs. So it's as you mentioned, it is viable now, as it will be something that is a tool that you'll want to use in the future as well. This model looks at ways we can navigate across ways of relating, ways of feeling, ways of doing, and ways that I am. You're going to talk through those four aspects with us today. Let's start with you discussing the ways of relating.
Absolutely. As we were saying, now more than ever, right, we need to connect with and have empathy for others, right? We're doing all this meeting virtually. We're having to think about our social relationships, how we communicate, how we listen to each other in kind of new and different ways. Conflict is arising as we are all in these kind of pressure cookers with people with no end in sight. We're all under one roof. So would point people to some of the items that we have in our toolkit. that really help us focus on our ways of relating. So there's things like the power of empathy, an activity where we get to kind of practice and think about what the difference is between empathy and sympathy. There's a tool called a complaint feeling request, where it's just kind of like a little older version of an iMessage, where you sort of state your complaint, talk about how you feel and what you request of the person that you're having a problem with. Conflict traffic lights, another way to frame how do we think about conflict, whether we're, you know, are we in stop, need a little more time, or ready to go in terms of having that conversation about our conflict. And then there's a feedback template that's really helps adults remember to ground what we're doing is feedback as opposed to advice, and think it's kind of a conversation template to help us really think about a strength-based way of giving feedback in the moment. So right now, many of us are zoomed out. Connecting virtually like this is exhausting. I have found myself having meeting upon meeting and wondering, why is this so much harder for me? And kids are feeling the same way. They may have hour upon hour of distance learning where they're on machines, they're using technology for connection, whether it's academically or socially. And so one thing that we really also want to stress is that youth can really be doing these activities, they're learning offline, and then use Zoom or other platforms to come together and reflect and apply. So helping young people think about how they're using their online time and for what purpose, and really also thinking about using their time strategically. Have young people be able to have their learning experiences offline and then using online technologies like Zoom or FaceTime to really do that reflection and application and connection with other people. So thinking more strategically about how we're going to use the relational aspect of those tools to maximize learning, but not get burned out.
The second one you're going to discuss today is ways of feeling.
Yes. So we're all just feeling this roller coaster of emotions from fear, anger, stress, gratitude, disappointment, and grief. It's important for us to know how we gauge, express, and cope with all those emotions. So as youth workers, as teachers, as caregivers, how can we help young people really name and express all those feelings that they're experiencing? The toolkit does have some examples of things we can do as part of like a routine check-in, things, a reflection bank that kind of has some different prompts that you could use. You could use them at the dinner table. You could use them to kick off a program meeting. There's also an emotion wheel that's a great example of helping people think a little more critically and intentionally about what is that feeling. So maybe it's not mad. Maybe it's disappointed. Maybe, you know, how are we understanding what that emotion that they're feeling is, and really going a little deeper to identify the and name it. And we have a word bank activity that can help with that as well. Because, I mean, what I'm hearing all about is how so many young people's lives have really stopped short, right? They're cut off from their friends, the social life that they're used to. They're missing out on these milestones, these major events, mourning things from prom to graduation, summer camp, lots of things that are kind of in flux. And so people are, their futures are in flux as well, whether, you know, you've got seniors thinking about what does this mean for their college, for scholarships or summer jobs, all those things. So it's important that we as adults don't dismiss those feelings and really help young people think about them, express them, name them, and really focus on what they can control in the situation.
The ways of feeling, not that all of these points aren't important, but this one really seems important right now. I think about that saying, how are you? I'm good. And then you move on, just doesn't cut it right now. There are too many feelings that young people are having, and you went through a lot of them. They're not all bad feelings. There are some moments of happiness and excitement. It's really helpful to have you talk through and share resources that both parents and youth practitioners can use to dig a little bit deeper. Because what is the benefit when a young person is able to get in touch with their ways of feeling?
Right. A couple of things. I mean, one I'm thinking, yeah, for us as adults to remember to ask young people how they're feeling, and we don't want to assume. We may think young people are really disappointed that they don't have school, but for some, school might be a place of tremendous stress. And so, you know, there's different ways that people are reacting to this. And so we want to make sure there's space for them to reflect and share how they're actually feeling. And the reason for that is because we know that once you are able to identify your emotions and name them, you're able to work through them in a more effective way. So that's all part of that process of being able to kind of manage and navigate the situation.
And for those of us working with young people, you mentioned empathy versus sympathy. I did a podcast recently with Karen Santel where she talked through that empathy versus sympathy and how to be empathetic during this time. If you can get young people to name their feelings, it's easier to be empathetic when you truly understand where someone is at.
Yeah, and we'd say even maybe it's, I don't know, you know, obviously I don't know how you're feeling, but to be able to say like, it sounds like, that's really difficult. I hear that that's a challenge for you. Thank you for sharing that with me. You know, thinking about how do you respond in a way that just, again, honors how someone is feeling and doesn't dismiss it or try to brush it. Sometimes we just want to brush these difficult things under the rug because we don't want to deal with it. We don't want people to be struggling. And so just opening up that space to know it's okay to have all of those feelings, the good and the bad.
Okay, let's move on to the third way, the ways of doing.
This new normal is requiring all kinds of new skills for us, right? We need to be flexible in how we're managing our time, creative in how we're solving problems, maybe realistic in the goals we're setting for ourselves. I'm hearing about, you know, I think young kids are really likely to have more structured days. They've got this schedule and all kind of laid out for them, and that can be stressful for parents. But what I'm also hearing is that older youth are really struggling in some ways with not knowing how to organize their day. And so that's one skill, you know, just focusing on time management might be a skill that needs to be attended to. So the toolkit has this goal sandwich activity to help young people plan their day, stay focused, make responsible decisions. And when we want young people to be thinking about is as they're thinking about their day, they're not just thinking about their academic time, but they're thinking about how are they incorporating a balance of healthy living? Are they exercising? Are they helping others? Are they spending time unplugged out in nature? All of those things that are going to help their overall social and emotional well-being. I think it's important for us right now to think, to really give ourselves permission to just slow down a bit, to unplug and be present. A lot of people are telling us that mindfulness is a key part of what's important for them right now. They want to be able to focus on their present thoughts, their feelings, how their body feels, what their immediate surrounding is like, and really seeing that as can be an act of self-compassion, you know, something that you're doing for your own self, but it can also be how we're mindful about how we express our care and our concern for others, right? Are we thinking about how we're going to be doing that in an intentional way? It can be about being aware of and coping with and expressing how we are feeling, and also about making that difference in the well-being of others. So right now, actually, our center has dedicated a particular work group to think about a set of responsive resources and activities that will really support young people's emotional, physical, and social well-being, right? So the goal is to help young people as they navigate this period of social isolation, the stress and anxiety and grief that's going along with it, so that they can really be taking care of themselves and making a difference in the well-being of others.
One of the things I really found interesting about what you were describing, Kate, is that ways of doing is sometimes slowing down and not doing as much as you were doing.
Right.
And how important that is.
Right now, we need to take time to slow down, to really think about our own well-being and taking care of ourselves and others. And it may not be through getting everything done on the to-do list. It may be about really just taking some things off.
Well, it sounds like that point might move us right into the fourth one, ways that I am.
Absolutely. One of the things that we really stress about this ways of being model is that our identity is at the heart of it, right? Who we are is going to influence all of the rest of it, how we think about our feelings, how we navigate our relationships. One activity I love is the mapping cultural values activity, where you sort of look at yourself and think about what are my cultural values, my personal preferences for a variety of things, particularly having people think about what this looks like during a crisis like this. So just in terms of emotions, right? Some of us are really comfortable expressing our emotions. Others really restrain our emotions. So knowing that emotions are high, but knowing that how people are going to show them is going to look differently depending on your cultural values, your personal preferences. Similarly, are we more likely to see change as disruptive or an opportunity for progress? That's, you know, not a fixed thing. And so being aware of our own orientations helps us actually, I think, navigate this, but we also need to be aware of how other people may have a different frame. And so if we're supporting them through this crisis, we want to know kind of how they might be approaching it in a way that could be different than our own.
It is evident that that's not clear for everyone, or it's not the same in every situation. You may not answer that ways that I am the same in every situation. And right now, when we are combining personal, school, and work all in the same space, your home, that adds a lot of complexity to this.
Oh, for sure. Because, yeah, I mean, how you're thinking about this, these things may be different now in this kind of situation, and they certainly may be different than the people you're housed with right now. So, you know, how you all are choosing to either express or restrain emotions is going to, you know, it's going to matter.
As I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, we're responding to our ever-changing environment. We're adjusting to our new normals. Sum this information up for us. You know, what does this mean for us as youth practitioners? And I think even for many listeners, for us as parents, what does this mean?
Yeah, for me, there's a few takeaways that would cut across these different dimensions of the ways of being model. I would say first one is we talk a lot about being socially distanced, right? Now this is this new term we're all familiar with, being 6 feet away. But I want us all to remember that we can be socially connected even when we're physically distanced. So how do we think about connection as the crucial part, that it's not as reliant on our physical closeness to someone, but really how do we facilitate connection even through other ways? The second thing would really be from the emotion side, the ways of feeling. I really just want to encourage everyone to just hold space for the emotions that are coming with this crisis, making sure we're recognizing that those are happening and that that's perfectly normal and that we need to kind of honor them and work through them. In terms of our ways of doing, I think what we want to remember is that we can adapt to change. We can adjust our expectations, whether for ourselves or for others, and we can really use this opportunity as a time to make a difference for the greater good. We can see the decisions we're making have an impact. And so being aware of that. And then the last thing is just making sure that we do all of these things in ways that are culturally responsive and trauma-informed. And with that steadfast commitment to equity. Again, as we started out, just recognizing that how this is playing out is impacting different people differently. And we want to make sure, you know, we're holding up as a society, holding up everyone's needs and making sure that we are all in a place where we're able to have our well-being tended to.
Kate, I want to thank you for sharing the ways of being with us, for continuing the conversation with us about social emotional learning from the podcast we did in episode 10 to now going a little bit deeper and relating it to what we have going on right now. And this information, I think, is just so applicable to all of us in multiple ways and multiple aspects of our lives right now. Tell us where we can find more information about the toolkit that you've referred to in this podcast.
Sure. The toolkit is a freely available resource. It's on our University of Minnesota Extension webpage. So what I tend to do is go to University of Minnesota Extension and just search in Extension's toolbar for the SEL toolkit. And you'll find there's a little video introducing it. In fact, you can freely download the toolkit there and encourage people to check that out. Again, there's resources that can be particularly useful to us now during this particular situation, but hopefully going forward as well.
Yeah, and that website is www.extension.umn.edu/youth, and that is where you will find those resources that Kate has outlined. I also would like to point out that you have written a blog post that is also called How to Foster Social and Emotional Learning While We're Social Distancing, and you'll find that on our Youth Development Insight blog. If you have any other thoughts or questions for Kate, please continue this conversation on that blog post at the bottom. You can make comments and read the comments of others as well. I'd also like to invite you all to look on the right side of that website. We have a new category that we've offered. It's called Working with Youth from a Distance that will provide you with even more resources specifically for this time when we are social distancing and wanting to continue to connect with young people from a distance. Thanks again for joining me today, Kate.
Thanks a lot, Carrie.
This is Carrie Rabideau from the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Please tune in again soon.